And to the United States we go, to Susan Davis, Congressional Correspondent for NPR, co-host of the NPR Politics Podcast based in Washington, D.C. It's kind of a segue, really, isn't it, for the departure of Donald Trump in the end, but not after holding on for dear life, Susan. What's the sense of change since that inauguration? It was a very intense inauguration, but what's been the sense of the place since?
Well, it's been a really hard and complicated couple of weeks here in America. I mean, the reverberating effects of the January 6th on the Capitol are still very much with us and still very much playing out in our politics and in the country. Most of the National Guard troops have left the city, although they'll keep some element of Guard troops here into the spring, into March. Obviously, there is now an impeachment trial about to go underway in the Senate for the role that the president played in inciting that attack. And President Joe Biden is, in his own way, trying to move on, trying to, unleash a very furious set of early actions to try to change the conversation, to prove that he is making good on his promises, and to try to get Congress legislating again. There's a lot of conflict happening in Washington right now, but I think the inauguration had a bit of a healing effect where it went down quite well, despite, all the security threats and the lack of people being able to attend because of the pandemic. But I think it was a needed and necessary moment of national unity, if only for a short while.
So the House, just tell me where you're at the moment in your sittings. Are the House and the Senate, they are sitting? Because, of course, the big question is whether the Senate can handle an impeachment at the same time as anything else. The whole security failure that surrounded that event. Has there been any changes since in the way the building operates, the buildings operate?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a ton. One, I would say that, they always had the security they needed to protect the building. The failure of January 6th was the ability to anticipate the attack and what they would need. They simply weren't ready for it. Now that everything is on high alert, they absolutely have the resources they need to protect the building and to protect lawmakers. One of the most impactful things, and it has been really striking, is Democrats in the House decided to add metal detectors outside the chamber doors. I've covered Congress for the better part of the past 20 years, and I've never seen anything like that. And if you know Capitol Hill, the only people that are allowed to move inside that complex without going through metal detectors are members of Congress. And the only people that can get on the floor of the House are members of Congress and a few handful of staff that are cleared. So to put up metal detectors, for Democrats to do that, part of the subtext is that is suggesting that members themselves are a threat. And not only that, Democrats are going so far to try to change the rules of the House, where if a lawmaker skirts the metal detectors, if they refuse to go through them, they will be fined $5,000 for the first offense and $10,000 for every offense thereafter. I mean, really extraordinary and unprecedented crackdown on security. And in a lot of ways, inflaming partisan tensions. Republicans are saying you're accusing us of being guilty of all these things you have no evidence of being complicit in this attack. And there is very little trust, certainly in the House side of the Capitol, among lawmakers right now. There is calls to do something similar to a 9/11 commission. After the 9/11 attacks, there was an outside investigative body that was given a subpoena authority and investigated the root causes and what happened with the attack. There is sort of growing bipartisan support for something similar to that, because there's a lot of skepticism that Congress itself can investigate this and have the end result not be tainted by some kind of partisanship, that they might need to deputize other outside forces to look into everything that went around this attack and how to make sure it doesn't happen again.
I mean, that's extraordinary, requiring that of House members. I know there's some interesting, affiliations there. There's a QAnon-affiliated senator, I think, and others. But the implication that you are a security threat is, as you say, I can imagine that is inflaming things. So what of the early, the uplifting speech that Joe Biden made, and it was all about unity and it was all about reaching across the aisle and wanting to work together? Are we practically seeing any evidence of that?
Yes, in some ways. But, a lot of times that stuff happens in small, quiet ways. It doesn't happen in big, profound ways. We're seeing it in things like the White House. The new White House team is reaching out really aggressively to centrists and moderates in the Senate. There's about a targeted group of 16 senators, 8 Republicans and 8 Democrats, that the White House really sees as sort of the potential core group to getting things done. This is a similar group of people that helped negotiate the most recent COVID relief measure that went through Congress shortly near the election. And, you know, it's a full court press. They're flattering them. They're talking to them, telling them that their voices will be heard in the White House. That's probably Joe Biden's best hope, is to sort of work at the middle and then grow from there. It's going to be tough to do. There's already a lot of Republican resistance to the things Joe Biden wants to do, most specifically the $1.9 trillion bill that he's already asked Congress for. It's been really tepid response on Capitol Hill. Many lawmakers just don't think that they need that amount of spending. There's a lot of things in there that Republicans historically just don't like. Like, they want to raise the federal minimum wage across the entire country to $15 an hour. So he's got a rough road ahead of him. A 50-50 Senate, the separate Senate completely equally divided between the two parties with the vice president as the tie-breaking vote, is really hard to legislate. It's going to be really hard. So his promise to bring them together is going to be probably one of the most difficult tasks of his presidency.
Now, what of these impeachment proceedings? I'm reading of a lot of pressure going on those Republican senators who'd voted for impeachment to happen. Is there any chance that there will be a conviction out of this joint hearing when it happens?
You know, I feel like at this point in our politics, we can't rule out anything, but it does seem unlikely. You would need a minimum of 17 Republicans, if you presume that all 50 Democrats vote to convict, to get a conviction. You need two-thirds of the Senate to agree to it. And we just haven't seen the evidence that there's that many Republicans willing to break. That said, the trial could impact how people feel about this. What kind of defense the president's team puts forward before the Senate could have an impact on this. And Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who in the first impeachment worked hand in glove with the White House to make sure there wasn't a conviction and there was party unity, has taken a step back. He's even cracked the door to say he could potentially be a vote to convict, although that's probably unlikely. But he's telling Republicans now it's a vote of conscience. So there isn't the same sense of demanding party unity as there was in the first impeachment.
What there is, though, Susan, sorry to interrupt, what there is a fundamental decision to be made about within the Republican Party as to whether they want to stay with Donald Trump as a power broker or not. If they don't, then voting for a conviction is probably the best way to limit his future options. But the party itself is riven over what to do about him, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you could limit Donald Trump's ability to run for office again, but that doesn't weaken his hold on the Republican Party base voter, which is still very strong, and why you saw only 10 House Republicans break on the impeachment vote. But the party's fracturing right now, and it's not just pro-Trump and anti-Trump. There's a lot of different wings of the party who like the president and liked his agenda, but they want to get rid of the politics of the personality around him. This is going to be really hard to do, especially if Donald Trump doesn't want to let go. He is still teasing that he might run for president in 2024. And if he does that, it's going to be hard for any other Republican to really suck up as much oxygen as he can.
So will there be a MAGA party, or is that being waived as a threat if the Republicans do try to cut ties?
Well, apparently there was filings made today to start a MAGA party, but the Trump orbit, Jason Miller, one of his former spokesmen, said that it had nothing to do with the president. It was outside actors. If it's not Donald Trump starting it, third-party efforts have very minimal effect, in generally speaking, in our politics. But if Donald Trump were to go that far, if he were to try to force that kind of decision, yeah, he could cause a real fracturing of the Republican Party, which could probably break it and make it almost impossible for the party to win elections if he were to do that.
Just a minute left, which is not enough to talk about coronavirus, but one element, we knew it was going to be a dreadful month, January, but one element is this problem there seems to be in some states of having enough supplies and not going at the rates that they want to go. Is it fixable?
I think it's fixable, and I think Joe Biden sees the success of his presidency maybe resting on how this year goes with vaccine distribution. If he can turn it around, if the vaccine can get where it needs to be, certainly by the summer of this year, if it's seen as a success, then I think many people in this country will see his presidency as a success by that alone, because the pandemic is arguably still the biggest driver of why this country decided to make Joe Biden president.
Thank you, Susan. Much appreciated. Susan Davis is a congressional correspondent for NPR. She's co-host of the NPR Politics podcast and based in Washington, D.C.